Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Education Report and the Making of a Nation, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, let's do it again. It's time to improve your American English reading and speaking skills. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with As It Is, a program that comes to you 7 days a week. While you are learning English, you are also hearing about important events around the world. Today, we have two stories for you. The first is about Vietnam. The country is going high-tech. More and more technology products are now being made in that Southeast Asian nation. We'll tell you all about it. Then we will talk about world population. The latest numbers show that the number of people on our home planet is growing a little faster than expected. Is your country or area of the world leading the way? We will provide details. Let's get started with part one. Vietnam may be getting a little tired of being known for only coffee and rice exports. Now the country is hoping to develop its high technology industry. Bob Doty joins us with more information.
Vietnam may not have its own center for high-tech businesses, like Silicon Valley in the U.S. state of California, but the country is becoming more important in the worldwide manufacturing system. The country has even attracted major technology companies like Microsoft, Samsung, and Intel. In 2012, Prime Minister Nguyen Tan Dung signed a plan for developing science and technology. The plan says that by 2020, the value of high-tech products should make up 45% of Vietnam's gross domestic product. Gross domestic product, or GDP, is the total value of goods produced and services provided in a country during 1 year. Investors say Vietnam is a good choice because of its location near China and important shipping routes. They also say that Vietnamese value teamwork and have a strong work ethic. Many Vietnamese citizens run family businesses and have a welcoming attitude to foreigners. Vietnam has a young, tech-savvy population that is highly interested in tablets and smartphones. The country also has a large number of recent college graduates. However, education remains a work in progress. While school is of top importance to most families, businesses often say that students begin working without necessary skills. Intel says it tested 2,000 graduates about 6 years ago. Only 40 of them had the technical ability and language skills the company needed. Since then, Intel has invested millions of dollars to educate Vietnamese students. Sherry Boger is general manager of Intel Vietnam. She said, the company sent students to universities in the United States or to an Australian university with a campus in Vietnam. Those who received scholarships work for Intel after they graduate. Ms. Boger said, one problem is that in Vietnamese classrooms, students do not feel they can ask a lot of questions. She said, and so what we want to be able to see in the workplace is employees voice out their ideas. their concerns, and that we have a free-flow exchange. Vietnam will need this educational progress if it is going to continue developing its technology industry. Vietnam's General Statistics Office said, electronics recently became the country's top export, worth $21.7 billion in the first 8 months of 2014. But businesses mainly put devices together and package them. They do not create high-tech products. To do that, Vietnam is hoping for technology help from foreign companies. I'm Bob Doty.
You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. The world's population is reported to be growing at a faster rate than earlier estimates. A new report says the population will rise to just less than 11 billion people by the year 2100, and it says the number is unlikely to stop rising in this century. Katie Weaver provides the numbers.
Our planet is home to about 7 billion people. Since the 1990s, population experts have predicted the number would grow to 9 billion before it begins to slow down and possibly decrease. But a new report predicts the world's population is likely to increase to almost 11 billion by 2100. The new estimates are based on the most modern statistical tools. They make use of government records and expert predictions about death rates, fertility rates, and international migration, or people moving across borders. During the rest of this century, Africa is likely to experience the largest increase in population. The report says Africa's population will grow from about 3.5 billion to 5.1 billion people over the next 85 years. John Wilmuth is director of the United Nations Population Division. He says that in the past, researchers thought population growth in Africa would be similar to that of other areas. They expected slower growth rates as birth control use became more widespread. But, he says, those estimates were wrong.
The level of contraceptive use has continued to increase, but slowly, more slowly than expected, and fertility therefore has been falling less rapidly than expected, and the population therefore continues to grow somewhat more rapidly than we expected.
The new findings are based on a joint research project of the United Nations and the University of Washington. The researchers believe the population of Asia will reach 5 billion by 2050. That is up from the current 4.4 billion people. The researchers also believe that North America, Europe, Latin America, and the Caribbean area will have a total population of below 1 billion. John Wilmuth says the pressure of feeding the rising population is likely to be less than might be expected.
The relatively good news is that the world has been winning the race between population growth and food production. If you look back historically over the last 50 years, certainly for the world as a whole, for many, most individual countries and regions, the increase of food production has outpaced the increase of population.
The latest population estimates appear in a report published in Science magazine. The findings replace the most recent UN projections, which were released in July. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Thank you for being with us today. Please come back again tomorrow. This is VOA, the Voice of America.
The Education Report is next, followed by The Making of a Nation. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. The United States government recently launched a $231 million educational effort. The Let Girls Learn program is designed to advance public education for girls worldwide. The program will focus on 5 countries in Africa, South Asia, Latin America, and the Middle East. The United States Agency for International Development, USAID, will finance programs for primary and secondary schools. Primary schools serve the youngest students, and secondary schools serve the older students. The money will go to Afghanistan, Jordan, Guatemala, South Sudan, and Nigeria. 62 million girls around the world do not go to school. USAID says millions more are fighting to stay in school. Many face danger just for trying to get an education. Christy Vilsack serves as a USAID Senior Advisor for International Education. She says it is important for young women to learn about education and be encouraged to attend school.
For them to be motivated by Malala, for them to be motivated by the kidnapping of the girls in Nigeria, and that means that we have a whole new group of people that we can educate.
Teenager and education activist Malala Yousafzai was shot on a school bus in Pakistan 2 years ago. She was attacked because of her campaign against Taliban efforts to deny education for girls. Many female students in Pakistan risk their lives every day to go to classes. Last April, the Islamist militant group Boko Haram kidnapped hundreds of schoolgirls. The group seized the girls because they went to school. In the Hausa language, Boko Haram means Western education is a sin. Cyrus Kawalya is a member of a U.S. program for young African leaders called the Mandela Washington Fellowship. He says education helps open the mind and provide possibilities that a person would not have otherwise.
Now, without education, then you can't open up your mind. What would you do?
Christy Vilsack of USAID said part of Let Girls Learn resources would be used to train high-quality teachers. Ms. Vilsack says USAID uses a new system to measure student progress. She said she saw children in Pakistan taking a 10-minute test under this system. She said the test very quickly shows ability to recognize letters, and it shows if the students can name and pronounce or speak the sound of the letters. Ms. Vilsack said USAID does not want students to just memorize information at school. She said the agency is training teachers to make sure students understand what they study. And that's the VOA Learning English Education Report. I'm Jerry.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Years of disagreement between the North and the South finally burst into civil war in April of 1861. Seven states in the South had withdrawn from the Union. Soldiers of the new Confederate States of America shelled the Union base at Fort Sumter, built on an island in Charleston Harbor in South Carolina. They captured Fort Sumter after 2 days. President Abraham Lincoln asked the states of the Union for 75,000 soldiers to help end the Southern Rebellion. Northern states quickly sent forces to Washington. But border states, those between the North and the South, refused to send any. Some prepared to leave the Union and join the Confederacy. This week in our series, Steve Ember and Shirley Griffith describe the first days of the American Civil War.
The first state to secede after the start of the Civil War was Virginia. It was an important state because of its location. It was just across the Potomac River from Washington. Virginia's decision to secede cost the Union a military commander of great ability. He was Robert E. Lee. Lee was a Virginian and had served in the United States Army for more than 30 years. Lincoln asked him to be head of the Army when General Winfield Scott retired. Lee said he could not accept the job. He said he opposed secession and loved the Union. But, he said, he could not make war on his home state. Lee resigned from the Army. He did not really want to fight at all. But soon after his resignation, he agreed to command the forces of Virginia.
Virginia's forces moved quickly after the state seceded. A group of 1,000 soldiers went to Harper's Ferry, Virginia, where the Union Army had a gun factory and arsenal. It was the same town where abolitionist John Brown had tried to start a slave rebellion a few years before. The United States force at Harper's Ferry was small. The soldiers could not defend the town against the Virginians, so they left. Before marching away, the soldiers set fire to the gun factory and arsenal. The fire did not destroy all the equipment at the gun factory. When the Virginians captured the town, they sent the equipment south, where it was used to make guns for Confederate soldiers.
Virginia's forces also moved against the United States' biggest Navy base, which was at Norfolk, Virginia. Once again, the Union force withdrew. Before leaving, it burned every building and sank every ship. President Lincoln was becoming increasingly worried about Virginia's military moves. He was afraid Confederate forces in Virginia might try to capture Washington in the first days of the war. After all, the Confederate Secretary of War had declared that the Confederate flag would fly over the Capitol building before the 1st of May. Washington was not strongly defended. It did not have enough soldiers to stop any real attempt by Confederate forces to seize the city. It was extremely important to get more soldiers to Washington as quickly as possible.
Thousands of men were on their way to Washington. but they could not get there quickly. Troop trains had to pass through the state of Maryland to get to Washington from the north. Many people in the state supported the Confederacy. The governor, however, did not. He refused to call a meeting of the state legislature. He was afraid it might vote to secede. He wanted to keep Maryland neutral. The first troop train from the north passed through Baltimore, Maryland, without incident. The second train was not so lucky. A mob blocked the rail line and threw stones at the train. Shots were fired. 4 soldiers and 12 civilians were killed. State and city officials met to discuss the trouble. They agreed that there would be even more violence in the future. So they ordered railroad bridges outside Baltimore destroyed. No more trains from the north could reach Washington that way.
President Lincoln told the officials of the great need to get more soldiers to the Capitol. He agreed that they did not have to pass through Baltimore, but he wanted them to be able to land safely at Annapolis, a city on the Chesapeake Bay. Landing at Annapolis would be easy. Getting to the Capitol would not. Supporters of the Confederacy had damaged trains, rail lines, and bridges between the two cities. The first soldiers to land at Annapolis had to repair everything as they moved ahead. Still, with all these difficulties, 10,000 troops made it to Washington in the first few weeks of the Civil War. The city and government were safe.
President Lincoln worried about the presence of Confederate supporters in Maryland. He knew they would continue to be a threat to the movement of Union troops and supplies. Lincoln wanted to restrict the activities of the Confederate supporters, so he took an extremely unusual step for an American president. He put much of Maryland under military rule. He gave military officers the power to arrest civilians believed to be hostile to the Union. And he gave them the power to hold these suspects without trial. This order suspended 2 of the basic rights under the Constitution. One was the right to go free until officially charged, and the other was the right to a speedy trial. The Chief Justice of the United States wrote a letter to President Lincoln. He said the Constitution did not give the President the power to suspend the rights of citizens. Lincoln disagreed. He felt the situation facing the Union permitted him to take such strong measures. If he had not acted, he believed, Maryland would have seceded.
Maryland did not withdraw, but North Carolina, Tennessee, and Arkansas did. There were now 11 states in the Confederacy. There could be 2 more. No one knew how long Kentucky and Missouri would remain in the Union. Both supported the Southern rebels. President Lincoln treated Kentucky carefully. He did not want the state to secede, nor did he want it to remain neutral. Kentucky reached from the mountains of Virginia to the Mississippi River. As a neutral state, Kentucky could block Northern troops from much of the South. Lincoln wanted it firmly on the side of the Union. The president did not use force in Kentucky, as he had done in Maryland. Instead, he sent people to Kentucky to organize support for the Union. Newspapers were urged to publish pro-Union statements. Home Guard forces were formed. They received their weapons and supplies from Lincoln's administration. Lincoln hoped that in time these efforts would win Kentucky's support for his war effort.
In Missouri, the governor tried hard to take the state out of the Union. He called a convention to decide the question. A majority of the delegates refused to vote for secession. The governor organized state soldiers. The Lincoln administration organized Home Guard forces. The two sides clashed several times. Some civilians were killed. The United States Army finally seized government buildings in the state capital. They forced state officials, including the governor, to flee. Missouri would remain in the Union.
The capital of the Confederate States of America was located far south in Montgomery, Alabama. Within the first few weeks of the Civil War, the Confederate Congress voted to move the capital farther north to Richmond, Virginia. They believed Virginia would be an important battlefield in the war. They were right. 2 days before Confederate President Jefferson Davis left for Richmond, Union troops invaded Virginia. They left Washington, crossed the Potomac River, and seized the towns of Arlington and Alexandria. No shots were fired. Confederate forces withdrew as Union troops moved forward. Within a month, thousands more Union soldiers were in Virginia. They were to prepare for a major battle at a place called Manassas Junction, or Bull Run. That will be our story next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Steve Ember and Shirley Griffith. Transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts are online, along with historical images, at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow our programs at twitter.com/voalearnenglish. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.